Hi, welcome to Night Clerk Radio. This is episode 11, Dark Ambient and Cinema. In this episode, Burke and I are going to be reviewing two albums that are both influenced by cinema. However, they are not from Cryo Chamber. These are two more popular albums. Of course, we're talking about Everywhere and Empty Bliss by The Caretaker and Anthology Resources Volume 1 by Dean Hurley. You had a couple of thoughts before we get into specific albums about what connects these two albums.
Yeah. Hey, so we sort of picked these albums at random, right? So I think The Caretaker was selected because we were just talking about more recent Caretaker work.
I think part of it was also I was looking through dark ambient albums that were both well received and popular and were specifically not from Cryo Chamber, because Cryo Chamber is a very prolific label and their work has been usually very good. So it's very tempting to just take their stuff. It's very easy to. So I wanted to go outside of Cryo Chamber. Both these albums popped up as ones that were very popular within dark ambient and very well reviewed, or like a lot of high ratings on various sites. I thought they were both worth looking at.
Gotcha. Yeah. So like you had The Caretaker and then an album about Lynch, which I'm a huge fan of. And as I was listening to these, I sort of realized that I think they're sort of thematically the same, maybe not musically, because the Lynch album, you have to sort of look at how it connects to his film work. But I think both of these albums really tie back to the discussion we had about vaporwave being safe and a safe genre and about safe times and safe worries and you're doing okay. And these albums sort of deconstruct that and sort of make you realize that like those notions of like safety or bliss or whatever are, if they're not outright lies, then they come with a heavy price. And I think that's an interesting sort of accidental thematic connection we had between these albums.
Yeah. Safety is an illusion. I mean, that's sort of an undercurrent in dark ambient as a genre, because as I've said before, I think dark ambient as a genre owes a lot to the horror movie soundtrack. Especially the tracks that are the anticipation, the build up to the kill or the reveal of the monster. One thing that I've realized just now as we're talking about it is, both of these are about how safety is illusionary, but one album is about external threats and one is about a very internal threat to safety. Yeah, so there are a lot of things that are alike and things that are different with these albums. These are both related to very, very specific works of cinema and very some more overtly horror, but there's that blur between what is a horror movie and what is a thriller movie. I think with David Lynch, you know, his work is more categorized as thrillers rather than horror because he's more respectable, but you know.
Yeah, he gets thriller or like dark comedy. So one of the reasons, I'll talk about this more specifically, but the Lynch was interesting because I'm in the middle of rewatching The Return with a friend during quarantine.
Twin Peaks.
Yeah, Twin Peaks, The Return. Sorry. Yes, Twin Peaks, The Return. And a lot of that is actually also funny in a way, like in a just like a, you just don't know how to process it. So there's like sort of this line, even in horror movies, between like thriller, horror, and like dark comedy.
Yeah. I mean, the both horror and comedy rely on surprise and the unexpected thing happening. You know, sometimes it's very funny. You know, a man slips on a banana peel and embarrasses himself, or a man, you know, falls into a pit and is impaled by a deadly trap. You know, like one is horror and one is comedy. And both of those scenes could be played for either horror or comedy. But like dark ambient isn't about the actual act. It's about the anticipation. It's about the sense of something is wrong, but it's maybe it's far away, maybe it's coming, but there's very little, you know, it's about the atmosphere rather than the actual act. And so I like both of these albums, but they're very different. There's a lot of a lot of delightful little parts in them, I guess, for lack of a better word, even though they're both quite dreadful. Why don't we get started with the first album?
Thank you.
So that was a little bit from track two, Night Electricity theme, off this Anthology Resource Volume 1. So this album was released in August of 2017, while Twin Peaks The Return was in the middle of its debut airing. I'm probably just going to call it The Return for short, by the way, throughout this, just by habit.
I just want to give people some context to begin.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So this album is credited to composer Dean Hurley, who is a longtime Lynch collaborator. He worked at Lynch's Asymmetrical Studio for 13 years, doing all kinds of soundtrack, sound design, sound effect work for tons of Lynch projects. Inland Empire, which is kind of Lynch's last big movie, Twin Peaks The Return, and all these little short films that were kind of made in kind of 2005 to 2018. Which is actually quite a lot if you look at IMDb. So what this album is just a collection of the sound effects and music that he made that appears in Twin Peaks. So it's interesting because there are some composed soundscape, actual soundtrack-like pieces, but there's also diegetic sound effects and music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is an actual soundtrack. I mean, I just mentioned how dark ambient is influenced by the soundtrack as a genre, and now we're literally reviewing a soundtrack. It's definitely qualifies on its own term. Even if it wasn't specifically connected to Twin Peaks, it would definitely qualify as dark ambient.
Absolutely. It is a soundtrack in the sense that Lynch movies are movies, and that it's sort of a disjointed collection of ideas. So like a lot of Lynch's work, it features tracks that are soundtrack, ambient, drone. So there's not an attempt to create a soundscape. Like, it's not trying to sound like a location in a movie. It's just this weird, terrifying, oppressive drone that you just sort of get lost in. So there's wind tunnels and it's just sonic dread.
Yeah, it's not about the environment. It's about the emotional space that the characters are in. Like, it's not the physical place, it's the mental space that they're in. I mean, it makes me really want to watch Twin Peaks, which is a big gap in my viewing record. One of the things is, as a dark ambient album, it is quite varied. You know, a lot of these dark ambient albums are very consistent throughout tracks. There's only very minor variations between track to track. But in this one, you have quite a bit. Like, some tracks remind me of Aphex Twin's ambient noise work. On the other hand, you have like a weighted room. Well, it sounds like a train going past. It's more like your ghost wailing. Again, that wind sound you're talking about. And then, of course, you even have like just guitar music, which is muffled. It's like you're in the alley outside of a bar, you know, as you're passed out drunk and barely hearing the music.
Yeah, that's an example of the sort of diegetic soundtrack, because I do think that actually does play. And it just, I think you're just sitting in the bathroom of the Roadhouse, which is one of the bars in Twin Peaks that the characters frequent a lot. And it just sounds like you're sitting in the bathroom and there's some sloppy bars blues band strumming one chord a couple walls away, far too loud. The wind is an interesting thing. Lynch's stuff has always had a lot of processed natural, air quotes, natural things reprocessed to sound scary. So there's several tracks on here that deal with electricity. So there's the electricity theme that we played for a sample. And then there's two tracks, Electricity 1 and 2, which are just these. I found Electricity 1 in particular really assaulting. It's just this brutal low hertz hum. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like my ears were going to kind of rattle off my head. And then when it starts to be a bit too much, it just cuts into this harsh crackling like a transformer exploding. Mm-hmm. And that comes up in a lot of his work, because I've sort of written about this my little pretentious film school days. But, you know, I've talked about it on the podcast too, is that sound design has always been a really, really important part of Lynch's work. They're really true multimedia experiences. And I guess by definition, all movies are, but I think they stand out in what he does with sound. So I've mentioned on the podcast before that one of the best things you can do, throw on a good pair of headphones and just listen to Eraserhead. All the industrial sort of electricity, wind, haunting sounds that you hear here are really done very well in that movie, especially for like 70s era sound tech. It's really impressive. And that sort of stands. So like a really recent example to tie it back to Twin Peaks is there's an episode where there's a depiction of the Trinity atomic bomb test in 1945. And he plays, first of all, an actual composed piece, which is Threnody to the Victims of Hiroshima by Christoph Penderecki. but it quickly decays away to like what you hear on this album of just, there's this long, slow, beautiful shot of the mushroom cloud, and then it just becomes like black on white bubbles and chaos and both visual and auditory noise, and like what you hear on here. And I think that really captures this use of sound design to capture these chaotic nightmare scapes that most of his movies are sort of trapped in.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I really do need to watch it. Mm. Yeah. Again, like I think the electricity you were talking about, like that's the Aphex Twin influence that I would be very surprised if Dean Hurley is not a big fan of Aphex Twin. God. Yeah. There are just a lot of these just low bass kind of like soundscapes that are, God. Yeah. It's those are the tracks I like the best. Like the loud tracks I have are interesting, but like if I were to make a mix, this would be the kind of thing I would take those specific tracks for a mixtape of dark ambient instead of like listening to the album as a whole. The other ones that almost kind of interstitial music, like the bars band playing, is kind of breaks up the mood a little bit. It's a bit distracting. Yeah. I like this album, but I don't know if I would listen to it just like from start to finish a lot.
I agree. So I think it's best to give people an example of kind of what we're talking about. So here's a little bit of that. A little bit from the sort of back half of the track Forest Interior, which features this, there's some little chime sound going on, but there's just a lot of wind and drone and noise and static. And yeah, I think Aphex Twin, I'm mad I didn't think of that myself, because that is such an obvious like Collected Ambient Works one or whatever. Is like clearly what's going on here.
I mean, wind is a really important part of this, just the sound of the wind in various formats, whether it's like whistling just overhead or in a more like kind of a wind tunnel sound, or like like the sound of the wind as a train goes past. I don't know. Did you pick up that, like the train sound? Like it wasn't like specifically train, but it just like had that rhythmic sense of
the pulsing of industry.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely, yeah. I mean, if you're a Twin Peaks fan, obviously you should listen to this, but I think any dark ambient fan would find something worthwhile in this album, but it's probably not like your intro to the genre. If you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I want to try out dark ambient. Okay, well, I like David Lynch too. Well, I guess this is the perfect album. It's like, maybe not. Like, it's a companion piece to a very specific set of work. So I think maybe you kind of need that full context.
I totally agree. Because a lot of it is also just 30-second to 1.5-minute little excerpts. But there are, you know, longer compositions on here that are sort of interesting. And by long here, I mean more like 3 or 4 minutes, maybe 5 is the longest track on this album. And those are some of my favorite also, because they have some of the same ideas that are on the shorter tracks, but just by virtue of time, there's more opportunity to explore. So I'd like to play one more quick sample of sort of what I'm talking about. So that was sort of an example from a longer piece, which maybe doesn't count because it has three names. So maybe it is just three short pieces and I'm being bamboozled here by my adherence to album tracks, but it's Tone / Slow Speed Prison / Low Mood. It's track 6. And I think this is the transition from Tone to Slow Speed Prison, where you have this kind of repeated, almost sounds like trailer music.
Mm-hmm.
There's a variety of ideas. I definitely agree, though, with your assessment of this album. Even if you're a Lynch fan, I don't know if it's going to get you into the genre. Yeah, I think something like Miles to Midnight that we did previously is a way more accessible album.
Yeah.
This is an extremely niche soundtrack. It is like the alternate soundtrack to Twin Peaks, because for The Return, there was kind of a musical act each episode that would be playing at this bar, the Roadhouse, over the credits. And that's like really more the actual quote soundtrack I think of when people talk about a soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know there's some other collected ambient pieces from Twin Peaks, because there's just a lot of this stuff by a lot of different people.
Yeah.
So you're really looking at something that's niche of a niche soundtrack. But I think that if you're interested in this type of stuff, if you're interested in like isolated sound design from movies where you would notice it if it wasn't there when you're watching the movie, but you maybe don't really hear it, I think if you want to explore that type of stuff, this is very, very interesting.
I do think that there are some really good bits in this that stand alone in the soundtrack. And like, I would definitely like pillage this. I kind of want to make a mixtape now for Dark Ambient, starting with this, just taking the best bits of it. There were some other parts that we haven't even mentioned, like the sort of like choir bits sort of later on in the album that I also quite enjoyed.
Oh, you like those? So yeah, there's the two tracks kind of in the middle, Angel Choir Reveal and Seven Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. Okay, so hey, 11 episodes, we finally disagree on something. I don't really like those tracks.
Oh, okay.
I think they sound cheesy to me.
Okay.
Some of the choral sort of courting voices sound very, and I think that's probably the point, because a lot of Twin Peaks is making fun of our sort of saccharine relationship to media. Like, that was the whole point of the first season of Twin Peaks, is like,
okay,
God, soap operas are dumb. Here's a dumb soap opera that's also like a horror mystery of who murdered a teenager.
Okay. All right.
So I think it makes sense in Twin Peaks, but musically, like, no.
Fair. I am just a sucker for those kind of choirs. I mean, I love the Bloodborne soundtrack for the exact same reason. So
normally I do like the timbre of that type of stuff, of like a big choir of people singing. I just think in this album, it feels a little weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is an interesting break, like a halfway point of just all of this oppressive tear. And then there's a little bit of relaxation and then back to it.
Yeah, this album likes to shift.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you think it's settled into something, it's like, oh, you're getting too comfortable. Let's change it. And it's very abrupt. Mm-hmm. And it does it several times throughout.
And what's interesting, sorry, this just popped into my head when you were talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
The order, though, is clearly not random. Like, it's not just a arbitrary collection or chronological as they appear in the show. There are clear transitions where the last few seconds of, say, Forest/Interior are the electrical hums in Electricity 2. So the album is designed, like, it does blend into one seamless listen. There are proper track transitions. It's not just, here's 20 things I had sitting on my cutting room floor, I'm going to put Lynch's name on them and try to sell them to you. It is a concerted artistic effort.
Okay. So I wonder if the album is trying to tell its own story related to Twin Peaks. The track titles are very evocative. I'm very curious about how, like, Shanghai Mysterioso appeared. Like, again, not knowing anything about the show, I didn't know Shanghai was ever referenced. I don't know. I'm very curious about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wonder if David Lynch actually, I mean, you said, you know, the composer for this, Dean Hurley, is a longtime collaborator. I wonder if Lynch had his own hand in this or input, or if this is Dean Hurley's own sort of take on meditation upon Twin Peaks.
I think so. So on a lot of episodes, David Lynch himself has like sound design credits.
Mm.
He is very hands-on in editing, sound editing, and everything. So it would not surprise me if he helped with this.
So do you think this is its own story, or do you think this is like the B-sides companion? This is for the completionists who need to hear every single thing we produced for the show that we couldn't cram in the main show.
I would have to listen, because there is another Twin Peaks that returns like essential ambient pieces album.
Okay.
That I have not listened to.
Okay.
So this might not connect as strongly to the story, but there are definitely little bits that I feel like I've heard throughout the show.
Are you talking about Anthology Resources Volume 2, which came out recently, or?
I don't know. There's quite a few Twin Peaks albums that are just collections of music from the show. I think volume two, The Philosophy of Beyond, you were referencing, is something else because he left David Lynch's studio in 2018 and that came out in 2019. So that might be the first project he did post Lynch collaboration. But I don't know, because he also has credits for What Did Jack Do, which came out this year. So it would be interesting to listen to some of his other stuff and see how it all connects.
Yeah, it's a mystery of its own, just like who killed Laura Palmer, right? That's what the show's
exactly
about. Yeah.
You got it.
So moving on, we have Everywhere in Empty Bliss by The Caretaker. So that was from All Eyes Bewildered, which is one of the more lullaby-esque tracks on this album. My initial response to this album, actually, the first time I listened to it was very late at night, and I just did not, I had this very kind of ominous and dreadful response to it. I was like, holy shit, this is a far more threat. I messaged you. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is a lot more threatening than I had thought, I realized. But when I listened to it in the daytime, I was like, this is not as bad as I thought. So I'm not quite sure about this, but I've stopped listening to it late at night. I do listen to it when the sun is up. Everywhere in Empty Bliss is from The Caretaker, which is an alias from James Leyland Kirby, a electronic musician who's been working for decades. And to give some context about this, The Caretaker is a very ambitious experimental project that began in 1999 and actually concluded with this very album. Kirby retired the alias, The Caretaker, saying The Caretaker is deceased, because the overall arc of this project was to sort of artistically demonstrate or to give an example of what happens when a person suffers from dementia. Kirby did a lot of research into this, and there's six different stages of dementia. And again, this took over two decades. So it began with The Caretaker not suffering from dementia, but simply caretaking a group of people, elderly people. And but the other inspiration of this project was The Shining, specifically the Kubrick version, because there are these scenes of Jack Torrance, you know, being haunted by the ghost in the ballroom. And Kirby was inspired by that and wanted to make a very creepy ass album. He began, his first album was Selected Memories from the Haunted Ballroom in 1999. And then there were numerous albums, but it was culminating in Everywhere at the End of Time, which is a six album project. He started in 2016 and then concluded in 2019. And then Everywhere in Empty Bliss is the final project. And some might consider it like, now it seems to be analogous to a B-sides, or sort of like, this is the leftovers, or here's other things that I didn't fit in there. And again, it's six albums and each album represents a different stage of dementia. But this is sort of its own thing. One might surmise that this is the funeral or the wake of The Caretaker. And these are the haunted remnants of The Caretaker's memory. So that's sort of, and obviously this uses a lot of plunderphonics techniques, because it's sort of like taking these samples of ballroom music, although I'm not sure he's sampling albums or if he created this 1930s style ballroom music just to then distort. And then, of course, hauntology in a very real sense, in a very sort of the sense we have talked about on this podcast. And so this is also cinematic with Kubrick. And this is also sort of a B-side sort of companion piece to a larger work. In this case, it's The Caretaker, which, again, is two decades of music. Yeah, it's a lot to take in. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So I didn't know the whole Caretaker backstory about dementia or the connection to The Shining. So that's really, really interesting. But this is definitely a haunted as fuck album immediately from the beginning. So you're asking about samples Who Sampled only has four things that are sampled on here. I don't know if that's because some of what is sampled is so distorted that people can't recognize it, or if it is original compositions or whatever. But right off from the bat, as soon as I heard that AM radio static, I was like, ah, here we go. Mm-hmm. Here we go. And the very first track, Loss of Want Back There, is a trumpet piece that is from 1921 by Edna White called Recollections of 1861 to 65. Trumpet solo. So right off the bat, you're listening to an old, almost 100-year-old track reminiscing about something 80 years ago. So you're like already double layered up on haunted. And then it's very like peaceful little trumpet piece. I think it in itself has calls to other tracks. Like there's a little bit of like a Happy Birthday vibe at some points.
Oh, yeah.
And some like other kind of bugle classics. Yeah. So even that track itself is like these layers upon layers upon layers of just like distorted memories. And then yeah, it goes into this big band sounds, so either like string arrangements or woodwind arrangements. There's a little bit of like not quite big band but more dissonant jazz, like kind of that sort of transitioning out of like cool jazz into something a little more dissonant. Each track, as you step up to the sample track you played, which is I also called lullaby-esque, completely independently. I said it sounds like a lullaby or a Jack in the Box. Empty, beyond, 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 losing, battle, lost, etc. Become more decayed.
Mm-hmm.
There's like this real sense of just falling apart and more distorted and abrasive and staticky, and it's great.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, entropy like takes hold very, especially towards the middle of the album, and it's just things fall apart. The center cannot hold. To give a little more context, the album that very, very strongly made a splash in not just in the ambient circles, but also in sort of mainstream music circles was An Empty Bliss Beyond This World, which came out in 2011. Pitchfork has called the 75 best album of the first half of the 2010s and the 14th best ambient album of all time. It actually does specifically say he took pre-World War II vinyl ballroom jazz records and sampled them. So that was 2011. And so that was what sort of brought, like, it got a lot of critical acclaim. It did very well, a lot of popularity. I mean, in the context of ambient. So that was sort of the when that sort of made everyone became, not everyone, but people noticed this project. If you listen to that, that's a lot less aggressive than this album might be. Like I've listened to the full thing of Everywhere at the End of Time once, and that is six. I mean, not at once, because it's 6.5 hours for all six albums. Once you get to stage four, it gets really, really dark. It might be too much for some people, because of just you realize what the concept is, and this is representing the mental disintegration of the caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
But this is sort of like not quite, I wouldn't say an encapsulation of those same six albums, but like it has some of these same ideas in it, which is to say it starts out relatively normal. Like it's distorted with the static, like the opening track is relatively Loss of Want Back There is almost normal. Like it's almost like this. And there's this sort of like childlike lullaby birthday party kind of style. Like it's very simple and nostalgic and recalling better times. But yeah, the disintegration happens pretty quickly in this one album, which is it's about average. It's about 45 minutes long, 40 minutes long, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not too long. Yeah, it's once you get to track five, Advanced Plaque, it shifts to a menacing sort of ominous tone rather than melancholy. Yeah, there's sort of this shift between melancholy, you know, a sense of loss of the past, and then like the entropy, like everything is falling apart. Like the vocal clips are all incomprehensible. Like they're just a bit like the Peanuts, you know, the adults in the Peanuts cartoons were just wah, 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 wah. But you can almost make out what they're, you think you can make out what they're saying, but it's kind of nonsense.
That was a really interesting sample. So I think we're talking about the track Glimpses of Life Denial, which has talking. So apparently that's like a wax cylinder from 1900 of man and child singing, speaking, and whistling to each other.
Yeah, it's a lot. Now, as sort of an aside, one thing I do want to talk about kind of quickly. First off, let's have this clip from Equinox Eye Recording. Thank you. I listen to this, and I don't know if Kirby meant this, but this is what I, this is what instantly came in my head, which is a number station recording. Number stations are a real thing, and we'll have a link in there, but they're essentially mysterious radio stations that broadcast a person saying numbers and then followed by a little bit of weird music, like calliope music. It's very weird. So here's a clip of a actual number station. Yeah, this is from the Conant Project, which recorded a bunch of them and released them on CDs, and now they're available on archive.org. They're just freely available to download. I've known about these for years because I look into weird, creepy things. Mm-hmm. But they've been, they've certainly been influencing sort of ambient and noise and drone producers and musicians for a while now. And I wonder, I mean, undoubtedly Kirby is aware of them, and I just wondered if that was intentional or if that's just sort of coincidental. But I immediately cued on to, I don't know, it just like, oh, this is number station. Yeah, you just hit all the bases here. Just yeah. And the reason why number stations exist is there's no official reason, but it is believed that various governments around the world use this to communicate with deep cover spies, because there's using various forms of cryptography. You know, you record the numbers, and then if you have it, what's called the one-time pad, you can decipher a message that no one else in the world can. And so this allows a plausible way for governments to communicate to various agents without anyone being able to figure out who is the actual agent, because it's radio. Millions of people can hear it. It's a very interesting esoteric thing that happens, and the governments deny that they're running them. Another sort of theme of like mystery and like confusion and loss of information.
That's interesting. So I did not make that connection, but listening to the sample you picked out for the numbers radio station, it totally makes sense.
Yeah,
I totally hear it.
I have used clips of number stations in RPPR before in various games, and I have referenced them before. So mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of in the DNA, I think, of dark ambient and a lot of noise, but it's sort of like one of these undercurrents. The thing is, this is, from what I understand, this album again is sort of like Kirby worked on his six, the sort of Everywhere at the End of Time over a period of 3 years. And he was just cranking out an album every, he was working every day for 3 years to crank out this very depressing album. And there were some days he would create something and he just put it aside because it wouldn't quite fit. And this is sort of like the collection of everything that was put aside. So one would say B-sides, but I think there is kind of its own theme. And I think, it's more, I wouldn't say spiritual, but again, I think it's more of a haunting, like this is the person's ghost lingering and then finally being welcomed into the afterlife, because it starts out rather strong and then it breaks up towards the middle and towards the end of the album, where you have like tracks like Internal Unravel, mm-hmm. which is just pure technique. Everything is unrecognizable. There's echoing winds and sudden bursts of sound. It's just entirely chaos. Then you go to a chanting in Dusk Memory Fractions, and it's almost like a sermon interrupted by yodeling. So we're back to like random access memories. And then here's one really interesting clip. Thank you. was from Entanglement Synapse Ache. And it's a very interesting because you go from very random, heavily distorted thing to almost very recognizable music back to noise. It's like shifting a dial on a radio really quickly. It's like you think you have a good signal and then you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to the very last track and Bliss Everywhere Bliss. The music is recognizable again. There's very comparatively little distortion and crackle. And so like it's innocent. That makes it very final. Like maybe the caretaker is now passed on to the afterlife and now is being welcomed by all their friends and family.
Yeah. This whole discussion, I've been sort of rethinking about this album because I did not know about the dementia connection.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes sense, like just as a whole structure. So I talked about the first half kind of has this decay,
mm-hmm.
and then it breaks out into this lullaby, going to sleep, I don't know, mm-hmm. memories of people talking. And then it sort of comes back for a few tracks. So there's the track Drifting Sublime Hope, which starts to sort of return from some of the middle of the album weirdness, noise, static, back to sounding a little bit more like mm-hmm. just distorted big band. And then very quickly again, falls apart. And it just feels like this sort of how some of that dementia can kind of come and go in waves. And you have like, if you've ever dealt with a family member with this, you have like good days where they remember you and bad days where they have no idea who you are and sort of that cycle. And then, I don't know, it's like Bliss Everywhere Bliss, the last track being this sad but undistorted music. Is that dying? Is that like the piece of...
I think it's beyond dying. I think that's the afterlife or the wake.
Okay.
Depending on that. Yeah. I think it's the funeral, the wake, some of this, the ritual to, you know, for the you know, the people mourning the caretaker.
Yeah.
Or it's them being going into the afterlife. That's my interpretation.
Yeah. That's interesting. Or sort of the relief, it sounds morbid, but the relief of a loved one being released. Mm-hmm. So there's like a really great Jonathan Franzen short essay that he did about this where his dad was dying of Alzheimer's. It's called My Father's Brain. It was in the New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
But he talks about sort of his dad's last few sort of years, weeks, days with Alzheimer's, and like this almost begrudging pain of like, oh God, it sounds awful to say, but can you please just hurry up
yeah.
and release yourself from this? Like mm-hmm. there's that human instinct in people to like kind of keep fighting and stay alive, but like,
yeah.
please, it's so much better on the other side if you just
yeah.
let yourself go. It's sort of a very
yeah.
dark approach to sort of that dementia.
But very human, very understanding. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, understandable. Yeah. I mean, maybe this would be, I don't want to like say content warning, don't listen to this if you have issues with Alzheimer's, but like, if you understand the context of this album, like, I mean, it's not going to be a happy time for you necessarily, especially the Everywhere and Empty World, or Everywhere at the End of Time. Sorry. That's a, like, especially when you get to stage four, it gets really dark. So like this is probably one of the more emotional Dark Ambient albums I've listened to that we've reviewed on this podcast. So yeah, keep that in mind. This may not be for everyone for that reason, rather than it's, you know, a very specific reference to a very specific set of work. And although it is, yeah, it's, yeah. So yeah, this isn't necessarily for everyone, even if you're, especially if you're just getting into Dark Ambient, maybe you're not ready for this. I don't want to say that. Just be aware of it, of what you're getting into, because yeah, it'll creep up on you, but it is quite excellent. And when I am in the right mood and during the day, I will definitely listen to this more.
Yeah, I agreed. I quite liked it. And you can kind of tell how different it is, maybe my approach to the material and just what it is itself. But, you know, we always have show notes. We're kind of write down our thoughts about these albums. And mm-hmm. my Lynch thoughts are very lucid, like mini paragraphs of coherent thoughts. And my notes for this album are just my brain trying to piece together what it's listening to in real time. And it's just these fragments of like, what are these fucking voices? What is happening? But I think if you're into that really like creepy, haunted,
mm-hmm.
emotional, dark ambient, I think this is like a really good album to check out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this is very, yeah, this is the most dark ambient. Like this is because it's a very real horror. Like it's, and it's like I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the episode, like there's sort of like this difference between the external threat and the internal threat. Like in Twin Peaks, it's more external. You know, there's a killer, or there's, you're not sure what's going on. There's mystery. There's things going around you that you don't understand. But in this one, it's an internal threat. You don't know what's happening to yourself, and it's inside of you. You can't stop it. No one can stop it. Yeah, I'm not sure which is worse. They're both about mystery, but in different contexts. A mystery that can be solved, a murder, versus something that cannot be stopped, you know, your own decay. Something to think about. Let's let The Caretaker take some rest. All of their work is out there. All of these albums are available on Bandcamp, and they're quite worth listening to if you're in the right headspace for it. Thanks for listening. This was a challenging episode to write for, but we came up with some interesting insights, I think, even as we were talking about it. That's sort of the joy about doing this podcast is, like, I don't know how many times we've like, oh, I'm talking about it now. I've just realized this.
Every time I sit down, I think like, boy, I have nothing to say about this. And then an hour blows by in no time.
Yeah. So in our next episode, we are fortunate enough to have an excellent guest who will be joining us to talk about the soundtracks of various actual horror video games. Do you want to mention who the guest will be, Burke?
That's right. We're going to be joined by the one and only Bridget from RPPR, Cry Novel, a whole bunch of awesome projects. She is both a previous horror game speedrunner in Resident Evil and just loves the genre. So she's going to talk to us about some of her favorite sort of soundtracks and sound designs. And we're going to have a grand old time.
Mm-hmm. So I am at Ross Payton on Twitter, and Burke is at Burke McBurkinson. The Night Clerk Radio is at Night Clerk Radio on Twitter. So if you have questions about us, feel free to shoot them to either of us or to the podcast itself. And of course, if you want to follow the show, that's the place to look. Also, we are working on finalizing plans for a Patreon launch this month, August, in the year of our Lord 2020. We should have some plans as we are recording this episode. We haven't fully figured it out yet, but hopefully by next episode, we'll have that all figured out so we can launch. I know we'll definitely do bonus episodes where we have some art from Patsy McDowell, who does the excellent RPPR Illustrated on the RPPR Patreon, and of course, a Discord server, and maybe some other unique content. Any thoughts on that, Burke?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think we have a lot of different ideas we've discussed, and I think it's going to be a good way for people who are into what we do and into talking about this sort of stuff to both interact with each other, but also maybe dig deeper into things that we might not get into in the main sequence episode, especially once we get into bonus episodes and where maybe we will do like Q&As or listening parties. I think there's a lot of stuff primed to go.
So yeah, if you like Vaporwave and Dark Ambient, once we get the Patreon up, sign up, and we can give you all the recommends, not just the stuff we review on the show, but certainly playlists and stuff like that, like what we're listening to. There's a lot of cool music out there, and we definitely need music more than ever these days.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or your podcasting app of choice. Tell your friends, your family, everyone you like, if you like the show. We appreciate those of you who are listening and supporting us through reviews and kind words. It means a lot to us. But until next episode, talk to you later.